In addition to our regular series, Please Explain and Underreported, we occasionally feel that a story in today's headlines might require greater historical, social, or political context. And when that happens, we bring you backstory. On today's installment, the recent chaos in Honduras is the first successful coup to take place in Central America since the end of the Cold War, but it's also part of a long history of political upheaval and military-sponsored coups in the region. Joining us is Stephen Schlesinger, an adjunct fellow at the Century Foundation and the author of numerous books, including Bitter Fruit, The Story of the U.S. Coup in Guatemala. I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Since the history is so complicated, let me start by asking if there's any nation in Central America where there hasn't been some form of coup or major political upheaval since the onset of the Cold War.
I think probably the only country is Costa Rica, but even that had a short-lived coup in 1948. Otherwise, every other country has been afflicted by coups of one sort or another.
And long periods of totalitarian rule?
Yes, long periods of totalitarian rule. Unfortunately, the great contributor to this was the United States.
Do you think that the current situation in Honduras with a deposed leftist president, actually who started off kind of right of center, I gather, being thrown out of the country by the military, bears any resemblance to the many coups in Central America's past?
Well, you know, this is a more complicated situation. The president of Honduras was thrown out because, presumably, according to the people who threw him out, he violated the Constitution. Actually, the Constitution does have a provision that you cannot run for re-election once you've served a four-year term.
He's trying to change that.
And the question is whether that was illegal to propose a referendum on changing the Constitution.
Well, he seemed to be inspired by what Hugo Chavez had pulled off in Venezuela.
I believe he was, inspired by Chavez to a certain extent. But, you know, Honduras has had many different constitutions. And the reason this one seemed like it might be more stable than the others is it did require a president to only serve 4 years or one term. So this did cause considerable upset among the governing people in Honduras. And I think there was a, you know, rationale behind what happened, but it should, in my view, should have been settled internally within Honduras.
I'd like to play a clip from President Obama speaking last week about the coup in Honduras. Let's take a listen.
I think it would be a terrible precedent if we start moving backwards into the era in which we are seeing military coups as a means of political transition rather than democratic elections.
Well, the president used that phrase, moving backwards, in reference to the coup. Do you think that he's trying to separate the United States from its complicated history in the region?
Yeah, I think there's no question that President Obama represents a different viewpoint towards Latin America in American foreign policy. We have a very checkered history in Latin America. The U.S. has been involved in probably over 100 different interventions over the past 100 years or so, and we go in for various reasons that, in retrospect, don't seem really justifiable. So I think that Obama is trying to make clear that he's going to treat Latin America and their countries with respect and with a recognition of sovereign equality.
But isn't Central America a special case? It's been a plaything for other nations throughout most of its history. William Walker from Tennessee landed in Nicaragua in the middle of the 19th century, declared himself the president. Joseph Conrad wrote a whole novel, Nostromo, about Europeans in Central America.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because we promulgated something called the Monroe Doctrine in 1823 under President Monroe, which was a doctrine which said that the U.S. would prevent any European colonization in Latin America. And that was that doctrine that has been used as the legal justification for what we've been doing there for the past many decades.
And when we talk about Central America, should we expand that to the Caribbean as well, Cuba and the Dominican Republic?
No question about it. I mean, the Caribbean is very much a part of that.
President Obama has frequently been compared to Franklin Delano Roosevelt on economic issues. Do you think that their approach to Central America might be similar as well? Because FDR gave us the good neighbor policy.
I think we're talking about the good neighbor policy number two now that Obama is in power. I think he really wants to see Latin America and the countries of Central America as, you know, sovereign nations that should be treated with respect, and we should recognize that they have their own rights to do what they want, and we should leave them alone.
In the case of, I've been talking about Central America and the Caribbean, it is different from South America, isn't it? Even though the United States has been involved in some South American political things, we've kind of seen Central America as our neighbors. I remember during the Contra years, there were people in the Senate who would say, well, how would you like an army marching up from Nicaragua through Mexico and invading Texas?
Well, this has always been the cry from many people in Congress who fear any instability in Central America will cross our borders through Mexico. In fact, the situation has always been different in Central America because we've treated it as our backyard and therefore as our kind of zone of security. And therefore, we feel we can go in willy-nilly when we feel threatened in any way. So, yes, I think that has been a traditional attitude by Washington.
Last week, I spoke with Miami Herald foreign correspondent Francis Robles from the Honduran capital about public opinion in Honduras toward the coup. Let's take a listen to that.
One of the things that's really interesting here is that although there's a very vocal opposition to the coup that took place here, I think it's safe to say that a huge majority of the people are in support of it. So I'm not sure if you're going to see any kind of popular uprising against Roberto Micheletti because people are very happy to have seen Zelaya go.
If Zelaya was so unpopular, why do you think the military felt it was necessary to stage a coup?
Well, you know, the irony in Honduras is that Zelaya was a member of the Liberal Party. And who were the people who ousted him? Other members of the Liberal Party. The man who took over, Micheletti, is a Liberal Party member. The Congress is controlled by the Liberal Party. So it was his own people who tossed him out.
Some Republicans in Congress have supported the coup in Honduras, saying that it was pro-democracy.
Well, I don't think it's pro-democracy at all. I think this should have been settled internally by the Honduran people. And I think that Obama is absolutely right. This sets a terrible precedent. We haven't had a coup in Latin America in 16 years. Democracy has pretty much spread throughout both Latin America, both Central America and South America, and we should be applauding that, not allowing it to retrogress.
Hasn't Honduras had a special relationship with the United States in this regard? Because for much of the Cold War, Honduras was a launching pad for covert operations all over Central America, going all the way back to the toppling of President Arbenz in Guatemala in 1954. We trained Contras in Honduras to fight the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. And I understand right now we have 600 soldiers stationed there.
Yes. Well, I think Honduras has always been one of the more pliable countries in Central America that the U.S. has dominated. And we did use the Honduras, as you say, for our work for our CIA operations, both against Guatemala in 1954 and Nicaragua in the 1980s. It is interesting, though, that Zelaya was, by the end of his term, he started out as a centrist, but just before he was tossed out, he'd become quite anti-American. And
become a close ally of Hugo Chavez.
And become a close ally of Hugo Chavez. And I think that, of course, is his right. I mean, the Honduran people can go in any direction they want to. And I think Obama made quite clear that the issue is not what we think about the government. It's whether democracy is surviving or not.
My guest is Stephen Schlesinger, who is talking to us about political chaos and coups in Central America. He has written a number of books, including Bitter Fruit, the story of the U.S. coup in Guatemala. How do Central Americans see the United States? Do they see us as friends, or do they see us as a country that has meddled in their politics too often?
I think they have a kind of bifocal view of us because, in one sense, they've they know the history. They know the U.S. has intervened on a regular basis in their countries in Central America. On the other hand, many of their relatives are immigrants and working in the United States and sending money back to them, allowing them to survive. So it's a conflicted viewpoint. I think, in general, they are happy when the U.S. is supporting democracy, and they resent it when the U.S. is propping up military regimes. But by and large, I think that they feel that the U.S. can be beneficial in their lives, particularly when it's we're talking about economic help.
Often people in Congress and in some administrations see Americans who go down there to get involved in helping the poor as being involved in revolutionary activities. I remember when some nuns were killed and raped, and people in Congress said that they had really brought it upon themselves, that they were, in effect, communists.
Well, I think that you can see in Central America a kind of pastiche of views that reflect on Congress. The right-wingers in Congress do hold that view, that the Americans who go down there are somehow helping subversive governments survive, whereas the more liberal or left-wing members of Congress see it just the opposite way, that in fact these people are promoting democracy. So in many ways, the attitude toward Central America among Americans is very reflective of ideological splits within our own country.
How would you assess the state of Central America today? In Nicaragua, Daniel Ortega has been put back in office, although he is a changed Sandinista. We have El Salvador electing a socialist president after years of a military dictatorship. Mauricio Funes is its president. And Guatemala's new president, Alvaro Colom, is a social democrat.
Well, you know, I think this is a reflection that there hasn't been a coup for the last 16 years in that area. And I think that shows that as democracy takes root, as people relax and understand that freedom is going to be preserved, they're more willing to, you know, elect their presidents from you know, more liberal backgrounds as opposed to the more conservative backgrounds, because they feel they can get away with it and that there's not going to be any outside intervention. So I think this is actually a good reflection on what's been happening there.
But do you think that the coup in Honduras suggests that if the militaries in those countries are unhappy with the policies of these newly elected leaders, that they can simply overthrow them? How far back does this tradition go?
Well, my hope is that this is an isolated event. You know, the American Organization of American States, OAS, had put a provision in its constitution in the year 2002, which meant that any time a democratically elected government is overthrown throughout Latin America, all the other countries in Latin America, including the United States, will either take action or oust that country from the OAS. So I think there is a building feeling now that democracy is here to stay, and I don't think that this coup is any prognostication about what's going to be happening in the future. At least that's my real hope.
Aren't these the countries that gave us the concept of the banana republic? How much of the instability has been, at least with U.S. involvement, has been political, for example, because of Cold War politics and the like and whatever happened before, and how much of it has been because of economic interests?
Well, always the reason given is political. I mean, we're fighting communism, we're fighting terrorism, we're fighting instability. But there's always, in my view, a underlying economic interest in most of these coups. And, of course, I wrote a book, Bitter Fruit, about a very classic situation where the United Fruit Company, American Banana Company, practically controlled most of the land in Guatemala. And when its land was being taken away under a proper land reform program with compensation, it got the CIA to intervene and throw out the democratically elected government and return its land. So that's the more classic situation. But many other coups, you don't quite see that, at least up front. That's not the explanation that's given.
In the 1960s, the CIA's work in Central America expanded dramatically. Was that again, because of economic pressures or because of fear of the influence of Fidel Castro?
Well, you know, they once said that there are the three C's are what control what America does in Latin America: Castro, communism, and catastrophe.
And the CIA could be the fourth.
And the CIA could be the fourth. And maybe Chavez could be the fifth. So I think those are the only issues that really sort of rivet Washington's attention. In the 1960s, yes, I think Castro was very much the cause of American concern in Central America, and by the way, in throughout Latin America. And I think that communism, of course, is inextricably involved in that. So, but now communism has been replaced by terrorism. So the story continues.
But the world also changes. Raymond Bonner was fired from the New York Times for reporting accurately of a government massacre because of pressure from the Wall Street Journal, and Abe Rosenthal fired him. Today, you can't imagine that happening.
No, I think that's true. I mean, it's a different era. Communism has, in a sense, collapsed. Even terrorism, while it for the last 5-6 years has been dominating the discourse in this country, is no longer quite the boogeyman it was. And in that sense, with Obama's election, I think you're coming back to a sense of reality now about what we should be doing in Latin America.
And the EU has gone along with it, and the OAS has gone along with it.
Yes, and I think you see this expanding around the globe. So I think we are in a different period, and I think it's very important that we continue the democratization throughout Latin America, which began several decades ago and has maintained a certain amount of stability ever since.
Are you continuing to write about Central America?
Actually, I'm switched my area to the broader world at large. I'm now writing a lot about the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. Although Central America, of course, plays a role in the United Nations, never had too much power because the countries are so small.
No, but the UN is a crucial player, particularly in Central America. The UN helped settle both the civil conflicts in Guatemala and El Salvador. And they still have missions down there making sure that peace continues. So the UN is a very important player in Central America.
Stephen Schlesinger is an adjunct fellow at the Century Foundation, author of numerous books, including Bitter Fruit, the story of the U.S. coup in Guatemala. And I want to thank him so much for participating in today's Backstory, in which we looked at political chaos and coups in Central America. On tomorrow's show, Hazel Dukes, the president of the New York chapter of the NAACP, celebrates the organization's centennial, and then the director and one of the subjects of a new documentary about the popular radio and TV program The Goldbergs, which ran from 1929 until 1955. Also, Kathleen Horan on relationship obituaries, plus Please Explain is all about plastic surgery. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Sherry Shen, Natalie Pano, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.